6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
But the big focus of it was the anti-Semitism, because that's what triggered it, especially after we saw Claudine Gay explode.
Hey, you said her name right. Good job. I am so proud of you. You're growing up, Mercedes.
That's messed up.
But true. True.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense. Hey, friends, and welcome to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Mercedes, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Please make sure that you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. What are we talking about today?
A lot.
Yes, of course. Every episode is a lot. Let's be honest. So what we're going to talk about today is that Joe Biden has emerged from retirement and sat down for an interview with the BBC, which I thought was a really interesting choice that I'm going to add my little like 2 cents on. Mm-hmm. And alert, by the way, today, Biden and Jill Biden are going to be on The View. So apparently Jill Biden has decided to put her elder abuse on full display with the ladies of The View later today.
Yikes.
Yeah. So we'll be seeing clips about that. Who doesn't want you to notice, apparently, I think, is mostly the media. Like, they don't really seem to be wanting to discuss it. The Democrats definitely do not want to discuss it. They're like, let's pretend that this isn't even happening. But he apparently is going on a little mini media tour, and it's making the Democrats, I think, big sad. Mm-hmm. And also, we're going to talk about DHS offering the $1,000 for self-deportation, this whole new self-deportation program that a lot of our listeners have some opinions on. And there was recently the Harvard anti-Semitism report that was published, which I have some highlights that we're going to discuss, but we're going to kind of discuss it just in the context of not only the report and what was in the report, but the argument of this being like the constitutional violations. Either it depends who you talk to, either Harvard violated people's constitutional liberties, or it's the administration by taking their funds that's attacking them and their constitutional rights, and particularly their free speech rights, is kind of the narrative. So that's generally what we're going to be talking about. It's going to be very interesting, especially, did you watch the entire Joe Biden video or interview?
No, I couldn't. It was so painful. I watched clips and then I thought, it's nothing new. I mean, we saw these interviews started towards the end of his campaign for... or the end of his presidency. And it's just, I see why the Democrats are pretending like it's not happening, because it is a very stark reminder of what they were about to elect and put back into the White House, which is scary.
Before we get into today's episode, I want to give you guys a heads up. There is a link in the show notes for a listener survey. I sent it out on an email yesterday to our entire email list, but not everybody is listening to us via Substack or is on our email list. So if you are listening here, we want to hear from you. Tell us your feelings. Tell us your opinions. Share with us how you listen to Rivera and Reeves. There is a survey link in the show notes. And for filling out the survey, you'll also get a chance to win some free merch and a free annual subscription to our Substack, which I would highly recommend. That would be a good one, because this weekend we're recording an unfiltered episode that is exclusive to paying supporters. So if you want to get the bonus content and have access to community, please consider becoming a paying supporter. The link is in the show notes. We also have merch. Make sure you follow. Okay, let's talk about it. So before we get into the beef of the episode, I want to mention some breaking news that happened while Rachel was sleeping.
Now. I mean, actually, most of it happened while I was sleeping. This is what happens when you go to bed at 9 p.m. at night. You wake up and...
and things happen.
I already have the Dawn Dispatch like totally drafted. And then I have to add 25 things to it. I'm like, why am I doing this? I just should stay up like an extra
hour. And that's like the challenge when I'm doing the outline for the show, because yes. I do the outline in the afternoon and I'm just kind of.
And by
like...
the time, please, nothing else hit the news cycle. But it did a lot, actually.
Pretty significant stuff. So when this happens, I think we're going to be doing just like really quick breaking news up at the top. And the segment's going to be called Breaking News While Rachel Was Sleeping. So what happened was Trump announced, he did a big announcement. He teased in the Oval Office with PM from Canada, Carney, that he had a big announcement coming up. Well, then last night, right when everybody was kind of going to bed, he did a big announcement that he had his first trade deal was coming, that it was done, and that he was going to be announcing it today. The New York Times and Politico are reporting that trade deal is the UK, which I think...
so is Bloomberg and Reuters.
Yeah.
Basically, everybody is.
So I'm pretty sure somebody in the administration was like, yo, it's the UK.
Yeah.
So we'll see what the big announcement is. We'll see if it is confirmed for the UK. It is a pretty big deal if you think about it in the realm of the UK could be potentially a gateway to a trade deal with the EU. I don't know. We'll see. But it is pretty significant. Also, Trump withdrew his nominee for Surgeon General, which was Dr. Janet Nechowat. Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't
know how to pronounce it. Forgive me.
This isn't our strong suit.
Yeah. Mispronouncing it. But she wasn't particularly popular. A lot of people were concerned about her because she was very kind of pro-vaccine.
She was a COVID hawk.
Yeah, COVID hawk type. He has now nominated immediately after, like literally right after the news broke that they were withdrawing that nomination. Casey Means has been nominated as Surgeon General. If you're unfamiliar with Casey Means, her and her brother, Callie Means, have been pretty big part of the MAHA movement and focusing on more intervention when it comes to health as opposed to just treating the problem.
Yeah.
So she's a former, I think, Stanford graduate, resident, was a doctor for a long time. So we'll see. There's an interesting development there that we're not going to go too deep into with the nomination of Casey Means. Some people are very excited. And there's actually been some criticism, too, of her nomination. So we're kind of keeping an eye on that. Yesterday, pro-Palestinian protesters took over Columbia University Library. I saw a video where actually they ended up being held in the library.
Yeah, they're saying that they were requiring them to show identification before they left because, of course, they're all wearing masks. So you can't see their faces. But I mean, there's a part of me that's nothing's going to happen. And then there's a part of me that's a different administration. Hopefully there will be some kind of encouragement and push for them to hold people accountable for what they're doing, because they weren't just taking over a building, which is bad enough if it's against university rules. They were destructing and destroying property. They were spray painting library shelves, just overall being vandals and nuisances. And nuisances isn't even a good word. They're just being like homegrown little thugs and terrorists. That's what it, I mean, that's basically what it is. So we'll see if any accountability happens.
the report is that 90 protesters, and I'm kind of air quoting that, were detained and some were arrested. They're being identified. And Marco Rubio, our Secretary of State, has already put out a statement that if any of them were found to have been trespassing or causing any damages or face any charges, if they were in the country illegally or on a student visa, they're out.
Excellent.
Yes. So
I have no problem with that whatsoever.
I know.
And if you do, you have come to the wrong podcast. And also, can we just say, like, real quick, Columbia's on my nerve. Like, they have been for a long time. A lot of these elite universities are. The Columbia University is the one that selects who wins the Pulitzer, right?
No.
Yeah. And so ProPublica, however you say it, they won for their literal, like, dishonest reporting
on the abortion
story. I just think it's also rich. I'm like, wow, maybe they won't get away with it this time. I don't know.
I don't want to give them credit per se, but
don't. You always do this. You're like, just to play those. Stop it then. Just don't do it.
The Trump photo at Butler did get a Pulitzer Prize.
I mean, it should. It had the bullet in it.
I know.
Like, if it didn't win, what photo of this year is going to win? That was a slam dunk. I'm not giving them any credit. If they didn't, they would have been morons.
Right. That doesn't count.
It doesn't count. This does not count.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And finally, this is a big one, especially considering what we're about to talk about. But Politico is reporting that the Trump administration is going to be making plans to release the audio of Biden's interview with Robert Hur. If you don't remember who Robert Hur is, he was investigating Biden for the classified documents that he had kept in, I don't know, offices, garage, boxes. So he was special counsel that was investigating this. And this was also the report that ultimately said, basically, Biden was too old and senile to be investigated or prosecuted.
But then remember, Robert Hur was castigated when he actually released the results.
The report, yeah.
And they're like, but you're kind of wrong. He's like, I kind of talked to him.
Yeah.
And I kind of am just, it's on audio. So let's have a listening party.
I know, the whole thing was very, it was a big deal because everybody was like, release the tapes. And then nobody would release the tape. Apparently, the Trump administration is considering to release the tapes, which I will absolutely be listening to.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
If your brain is at full capacity with to-dos, birthdays, dinner plans, meet Skylight Calendar. It syncs your entire family's schedule onto a sleek digital display, so you focus on important things, like where you left your coffee. Right now, Skylight is offering our listeners $30 off their 15-inch calendars by going to skylightcal.com/talk. Go to skylightcal.com/talk for $30 off your 15-inch calendar. That's skylightcal.com/talk.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Speaking of Joe Biden, he did an interview with the BBC. And so initially, I was kind of trying to figure out, like, why is this man deciding to do an interview with the BBC? Two things. One, apparently the interview was done for V-Day. So it kind of is fitting that it's the BBC that wants to do an interview for V-Day.
Why would you interview Joe Biden for V-Day?
Because he's like the oldest, most decrepit president that's still alive.
Well, what does that have to do with anything? He is the last person I would talk to about V-Day. Like anybody else. What does he have to do with V-Day? Do you guys know what V-Day is? First, maybe we should tee that up for people in case they're unaware of what V-Day means.
Yes.
Today is the 80th anniversary of the announcement that Winston Churchill gave the morning of to all of these wonderful people in Great Britain standing under the Union Jack flags with their ration books. And he's basically said, Germany's in retreat and the war is over, essentially. And so that's what V-Day is. And the BBC wants to talk to Joe Biden about that. Why?
I would tell
you. Are you going to play devil's advocate?
I'm not going to say. I still think it's absolutely ridiculous, but I can give you the context of what they were attempting to do.
Please do.
The entire interview, because I watched it, I was like, if I'm going to talk about it, obviously I need to watch it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's a 30-minute interview, obviously edited. And the crux or the way the interview was being framed is, not only is Biden an elder statesman that understands and was alive close to this period of World War II. My point is that his parents were alive. Like he was, he has a quick, short connection to that time.
Well, yeah, if he remembered things, but he doesn't. Again, every interview. I'm sorry if that sounds mean, but it's just the truth. Well, he just,
The entire interview was framed around Joe Biden is an elder statesman. Mm-hmm. And here's a reminder of how horrible Hitler was. Right. And then we would kind of like weave in their questions on his opinion of Trump.
Right.
And how
Trump's also Hitler.
Correct. Correct.
Right. How did I not see that? Again, I'm surprised anew at the lows that the modern day journalist will go to in order to have a catchy story.
That is the entire thing. Like I watched this whole 30-minute interview and it was all framed. First of all, incredible softball interview for Biden.
Right.
Multiple questions and layups for him to have an opportunity to give his two cents about the current administration and Trump in general as an individual and as a president. So that happened several times. He was not shy about insinuating or just going very close to basically calling Trump a fascist, putting in his ideas. Now, it was also clear to me in this interview that he continues to be relatively delusional. I will say, and I'm only saying relatively because I think because of the fact that he's actually been able to have an extended nap and he was in his retirement, that he's a little bit more rested. So he wasn't like completely incapable of answering questions like he has been in the past. Mm-hmm. So giving him like that smidgen of goodwill, I guess you would say.
You are so nice.
You are so annoyed. She's going to stop podcasting with me. She's like, I can't talk to this woman anymore.
No, I think it's good that we have some balance for my curmudgeonly opinions. But honestly, like, again, they're just doing that because it's convenient for their narrative
and
that Joe Biden
honestly,
has to say.
Let's think about what the optics of this particular interview is. He is doing an interview with the BBC, which is a foreign, I mean, yes, the UK is an ally, but this is still a foreign country. And this is the propaganda arm, basically, of the UK. I mean, the BBC is government.
Hey, USAID was paying the BBC money to send out specific smoke signals and messages about the government. Like, it's a propaganda wing. I mean, if we're going to say that, like, CNN and MSNBC are, I think we can kind of say that about BBC, too. It's just that I care a little bit less because it's not my country.
Yeah. The entire interview was an attempt to basically push propaganda against the Trump administration,
for sure.
He spent the entire interview being asked questions about how Trump is doing, comparing it to himself, and at no point making any kind of acknowledgement of the failures of his own presidency.
Well, the one clip I saw, he was basically like, we came in and we did everything we were supposed to do.
That clip to me was wild, which I have because.
Please play it because I just again, I always think of this business that I've heard everything and I'll never be surprised again because, I mean, they all say the same thing just in a different year. It's all on a rotation. Nothing's new. But when he sat there and he's like, we just did so much. It was such a revolutionary administration and term. I was like, yeah, it sure was. But you didn't do a whole lot. What reality are you living in? My mouth was on the floor. I'm like,
because the question was posed to him in, do you think that you should have, that you stayed too long, that you shouldn't have run again?
I can hear your passion. I can hear your anxiety that the world is changing the way it has. And for a long time, you believed, you said, I'm the man who can stop Donald Trump. And you did once. And in the end, you withdrew from that election campaign at the last minute. It's a question you know lots of people ask you, Mr. President. Did you leave it too late? Should you have withdrawn earlier, given someone else a bigger chance?
I don't think it would have mattered. We left at a time when we had a good candidate. She had fully funded. And what happened was, I had become what we had set out to do, no one thought we could do. And become so successful in our agenda, it was hard to say, no, I'm gonna stop now. I meant what I said when I started, that I think I'm prepared to hand this to the next generation. It's a transition government. But things move so quickly that it made it difficult to walk away, to get, and it was a hard decision, but.
Regrets though?
No, I think it was the right decision. I think that it was just a difficult decision.
I would say that was maybe the toughest question that was given to him.
Yeah.
Where it was like asking him to reflect if maybe possibly he contributed to the fact that Trump was president because he didn't leave early enough and he decided to run again. And his argument was, we were just doing so great. It was kind of hard for me to move on or to let it go.
I'm sorry. Even Democrats are laughing at that. Come on. I mean, that's kind of funny.
If you listen to the entire exchange, too, he does throw, I feel like, a little bit of shade at Kamala Harris, because he says we set her up. She was set up. She had money. She was a good candidate. So I don't really think I'm at fault for anything. But he doesn't specifically say that. If you listen to him between the words, he's basically like, I didn't do anything. I basically set it up for her on a silver platter and she fumbled the ball.
Well, listen, if I'm going to give Joe Biden credit, which literally never happens, he could have been really mean. He could have actually thrown Kamala Harris. He has nothing to lose at this point. And Kamala Harris actually does have some stuff to lose. I mean, she's like floating potential governor bids in California. She has aspirations. Trust me. We haven't seen the end of Kamala Harris, even though I wish. Oh, my gosh. I wish we would. But like, he could have really thrown her under the bus and said, yeah, I got duped. I got replaced. She knew it. Everybody else knew it. They did this on purpose. They forced my hand. There was nothing else I could do. Thanks, Nancy Pelosi. Because he, like I said, he's not entering back into politics. He has nothing to lose except for maybe a presidential library.
He's too just old.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe that was him, I don't know, sparing her the embarrassment of him just what actually happened behind the scenes.
I think, first of all, this is kind of unprecedented. Sort of, because traditionally, when there is a new president, the previous president doesn't go on some kind of speaking tour, mini or otherwise.
Yeah, they kind of fade into the background for a
bit. Yeah, to criticize the current administration. Now, I won't say necessarily it's unprecedented, because I will acknowledge the fact that Trump kind of started it. When Biden came in, Trump was not afraid to point out that Biden was not well. Yeah. I think maybe he took a day, a week or two off, but the entire time he was. So that's, I won't necessarily say like Biden started it. However, I think what is happening here is pretty clear to me. Like, he's taken this opportunity to do this interview with the BBC, which I think is a really poor choice in general, because right now one of the biggest concerns is about the like America first, especially when it came to immigration and just policies in general. And then you go and you do an interview with the BBC. I think that's a weird choice, but okay, whatever. But now he's also going on The View today, like I mentioned. So,
and they're not America first either. So
no, not even at all. Now, obviously, this is going to be a softball, very friendly interview. But I think what is happening here is you have three books that are coming out all back to back.
Yeah.
not calling out anything or any blame to the media's reporting, but
of course not
to Biden's administration and the cover up of Biden's
cognitive decline.
Yeah. So,
and of course, the media, how would they have ever known?
No, because it was so covered up. Like, he was just so protected. And so I think that what is happening here is kind of like
he's doing damage control.
Correct.
That's what he's doing. He's coming out like, hey, look, I can still talk and walk, kind of. That's
yeah.
It. I mean, it's not doing him any favors, because anybody who actually cares, like, I don't know, who are you trying to target here? Who are you trying to reach out to? Because every conservative who's had eyes has known this for 5 years. And none of us believe, like, anybody can be okay for 15-minute interviews. Like, we all know that he actually was in decline, and he is in decline now. They're just going to give him whatever they gave him to get him through other stuff when he was the president. And then Democrats all know it, too.
And I just think it's really telling, too, because the Democrats are not, like, nobody's talking about it.
Well, they're not acknowledging it.
Yeah.
It's nowhere in the media at all.
It is. Fox News is talking all about it. Podcasts are talking all about it. But yes, correct. Like, the legacy or left-leaning media doesn't want to bring a whole lot of attention to it. And even when they do bring attention to it in mm-hmm. some of the panels, you have Democrat strategists basically in the politest way possible going, please stop.
Yeah.
Please don't do this.
And talking to you like you are a mean person for bringing it up again. Like, yeah. We should all just put it to bed, never speak about it again. It is a disservice to the office of the president and to Joe Biden's legacy. And you're really mean to keep harping on it. When, hello, if this was Donald Trump that was showing obvious signs of decline for 5 straight years, 4 of which when he was sitting in the Oval Office, it would be all the media could talk about. The hypocrisy is startling.
And let's be honest, this isn't just about the politics of it, right. As in he makes the Democrats look weak or whatever you want to say. This is also because it brings more attention to the failure of the media.
Exactly.
Which
they're already not doing great. They're not going to draw attention to the largest media scandal, one could say, in U.S. history, or at least in modern history. Which nobody's even marketing in like that. But that's exactly what it was. It was a scandal. They knew what was happening. They participated in it. And now they're like pretending that they want us to believe that they're on it and they know everything. And without them, that democracy would die in darkness. But they're dumb enough to miss like the most obvious thing. And then
that we all saw.
If catching that means that we could be these like investigative wunderkinds, then we all have a job.
We should be getting a Pulitzer.
Seriously, I was calling this out 4 years ago. So where's my Columbia University acknowledgement? Man,
I just to kind of wrap this one up, I think it's also very telling that Biden is doing this. And to me, it's just another clear sign that the Democrat leadership is non-existent.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if they existed and if they were working together and they could figure out their entire strategy and their potential comeback or their hope for a comeback, they would be on the same page and Biden would be cooperating and he wouldn't be doing this.
Yep.
So speaking of Biden failures, let's talk about trying to fix it, the crisis that happened at the border while he was president.
Probably his biggest failure as president next to the Afghanistan withdrawal.
Absolutely. In fact, yeah. I just shared on my stories yesterday, this is a little bit of a detour, and it's like obvious, but Axios did a report about, it was some strategist, some poller that basically had a come to Jesus moment with Democrat leadership and told them, in so many words, you guys seriously failed on the border and immigration. And this is the number one issue that put Trump back into the presidency. And so you really need to move away from the messaging that where the Democrats were at. Yeah. And you can do, people are open to reform. People are open to amnesty. But you have to make sure that the border is secure, that it has to be shut down.
And they need to move away from, like you said, all of this talk about these. I really think they need to move away from that. I think that due process is obviously on people's minds and it's important. But they're harping on that so much harder than they're harping on just this week. I mean, there's been illegal immigration drug busts. There's been child rapists deported. There's been all of these different illegal immigration basically scandals of these perpetrators that are inside the country, thanks to Joe Biden's open border policy, and they don't ever even hint at it. I don't even hear them talk about it on their networks. Instead, they're talking about
tariffs and the economy, which I think is honestly
it's important, of course, but at least a little acknowledgement would go a long way for Democrat talking heads. Like if they just acknowledged that, yes, it was a huge problem and we need to work together as a coalition and as a party to fix it.
I think it would go a long way.
Yep.
Yeah. So for sure. But one of the things that the Trump administration has recently proposed, which I think is a quite clever strategy, but it created, I've shared it in my stories, and I had an array of reactions. So it was announced earlier this week, which we mentioned it briefly on Tuesday's episode, that DHS is now instituting a self-deportation program. And this self-deportation program, it uses the CBP One app where people can sign up to self-deport. And then in addition to that, they have an incentive of $1,000 once they leave the country on their own. Now, also the additional benefit of them leaving the country on their own is that they would still then have the opportunity to return through legal means. So they can apply to come into the United States, they can come in on a work visa. There's multiple ways that they could come back in, but they have to come back in legally. If they are apprehended and deported, no return for you. Out of the country, never come back. When I shared this story, most people were reacting to this $1,000 offer, like this carrot at the end of their deportation that they weren't particularly fond of. Did you share the story and have that same response?
I did. I had a lot of people respond. I actually did a feed post, which allows the comments to kind of
bubble
stay. Yeah. And there was quite a few people. So I'm looking at it now. Lots of people thought it was creative, like it was a creative workaround. But I thought this one was good. Al said, I see it as incentivizing them to do the job that otherwise CBP would do eventually. It gets it done quicker, more safely, and more cost effectively. But then there's a lot of people who are like, hard no, absolutely not. Like, why are we even giving them anything at all? But lots of people said that they were fine with paying for flights, but not extra money.
Not the extra money. Like that.
Yeah. But I think what people aren't, they didn't know, or they're not, and I put it in the caption too, is that money is going to be spent. Like, the deportation process is not cheap, and we end up paying for it. So I think, what did they say? It's something like, on average, $17,100 basically for the feds to arrest, detain, and deport a single illegal immigrant. So if we're able to do it more cost effectively, $5,000, say, after plane tickets and transportation and this $1,000 kickback, I mean, obviously you would pick that. I think what people have a hard time with is the saying out loud that we're giving illegal immigrants anything. That's hard for them because it is basically admitting the failure of our immigration protocol for the last, I mean, decade, really.
I think it may be also coming from people seeing it as like they're getting some kind of reward after they've broken the law, which I think is fair.
I think it's fair, but either way, they have to be deported, and either way, someone has to pay. So if we allow them to make the choice to self-deport and we give them the money that we're going to have to give them anyway if we deport them, wouldn't we want it to be a lot cheaper? The answer is yes. And I think that most people, if they had to sit and think about it, they would also say the same thing. It's just the, like you said, that idea of $1,000 for what are they going to buy? Candy at the airport? Like, why are we giving them anything? But if you think a little bit more about it, why wouldn't we want to save quite a bit of money for each deportee?
And it's not only that, it's not just saving the money, but if we really think about the challenges that this administration has gone through in order to deport people. First of all, it's not just like the cost of deportation isn't just the flight. It's also the law enforcement, the fact that they have to go look for them. They have to apprehend them. They have to process them. That's why it costs so much more. In addition to that, we have these activist judge in different at different levels throughout the country who are actively resisting the president deporting these individuals. Yeah. And so you can't like claim that they're being unfairly deported or that they haven't gone through due process if they're like signing up and choosing to deport themselves. Like that's freedom. You can go back home. So I think that, and then also the other issue is that when you're doing a deportation versus when someone is self-deporting, you have to coordinate with the other country to receive them. So that is another hurdle that you have to go through. So for example, let's say you have to deport them back to El Salvador, Venezuela, Guatemala, whatever. And because it's an international issue, you're having to coordinate with that country. That country can be like, no, I don't want them. And now we're stuck with them with either having to keep them here, which is maybe why Trump is, I don't know, Alcatraz and Guantanamo is probably part of this entire thing. Or we're going to have to find another country that will take them. So it just kind of makes things a lot more difficult. I think in the big scheme of things, not only does this make things cheaper, but it makes it easier. It takes away these hurdles. Now, in regards to the judges specifically, the House did recently pass the bill that they were proposing on limiting these broad injunctions, which now has to go to the Senate. So we'll kind of keep an eye on that. But, you know, clearly, I think everybody who's a listener here knows that the judges have been like they are the drama. Okay.
Yeah. They are.
They have been a problem.
It cannot be understated that untangling a knot is so difficult when it's to this degree. Our immigration system has long been a mess. And the flood of illegal immigration that occurred in the last administration is mind-blowing. And so it doesn't matter how it happens. One way or another, it's going to be a mess and someone's not going to like it. And no matter how Trump handles this administration deporting all of these illegal immigrants, it's not going to be desirable. Like in the situation,
somebody's going to be upset.
Somebody's going to be upset. There's going to have to be money spent because this mess is here. And if you want to be able to take care of it and not have every single illegal immigrant go through a lengthy court process, it would never get done. We'd be sitting here doing this in 100 years. It's just not going to happen. And so to me, it's almost like I'll just take the best I can get. And this seems like a positive solution to a really big problem.
And I think that $1,000 is another carrot to get people, because whether or not you like people are incentivized by two things. It's like by the positive or by the negative. It's either because they feel threatened and it's not a good situation or something's going to have a negative outcome. And then people are also incentivized because it's going to be a positive or they're going to get some kind of bonus at the end. And so that is part of playing or I don't know, like using that human nature to get people to self-deport. Yes. And I mean, let's be honest, there is an expense probably once they arrive, unless they set things up, they have transportation, they have to get somewhere else. Like they can't just be dropped in.
Can you imagine if there wasn't some sort of covering of costs with these illegal immigrants when they board the planes here, when they get to the inbound country? Can you imagine the outcry from the media if we just like
dump them in airports?
It would be humanitarian crisis. So there is some steps we need to take to at least humanely take these illegal immigrants to where they need to be and get them there. And if this is the most cost-effective way and it benefits American citizens, because it's 10 grand less than what we would be spending, I'm definitely all ears.
And just so people know, they are tracked through the CBP One app and they don't receive that $1,000 until the app confirms that they are at their final destination. So, and if they do return back into the United States illegally, then again, they will be deported and they will lose any ability or any chance to come back to the United States legally.
Yeah.
Another contributing factor that I kind of want to put on everybody's radar, because this is in the pipeline right now, is the issue with sanctuary cities and how governors have protected these sanctuary cities. And so Governor Kathy Hochul. Governor Kathy Hochul, J.B. Pritzker, which is Illinois, and our favorite, Tim Walz, governor of Minnesota, those three governors are being called to testify before Congress, and that is happening on June 12th. I will absolutely be watching that.
She will be your news correspondent for that day, because what day is it? What day of the week is it?
I have to look. What day of the week is June 12th?
Oh, gosh. That's like ages away.
Yeah, we have so much time for that. But that's why I was like, we're not going to go deep into it. But I just kind of want to put
it. No, I can't wait.
Because
that sounds pretty great, actually.
So that is a Thursday. So unfortunately, it's going to be happening after we record.
Maybe we'll have to make a special like exception that we can record on a Friday or something. We can totally roast these governors who are actively putting their constituents in harm's way to prove a point. Yes.
I especially can picture Tim Walz with his big bug eyes. Remember, during the debate with J.D. Vance, that he looked like he was just about to be hit by a car in a minute?
Yes. More of that. Pump it straight into my veins. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So let's also go. This is kind of going to get into the issue of immigration, but specifically when it comes to student visas. Mm-hmm. So Harvard University has, everybody knows our opinions on Harvard University.
Our most prized university.
Yes. Our favorite glorious institution of higher learning that is Harvard, who's completely not like just thousands upon thousands of dollars to influence your children and feed them propaganda.
Correct.
So I think it was last week they dropped a report that they were pushed to do, by the way, on the rise of it. It's funny because the report was anti-Semitism and anti-Islamic.
Yeah, Islamophobia.
Both. Yeah, Islamophobia. I think it was both. But the big focus of it was the anti-Semitism, because that's what triggered it, especially after we saw Claudine Gay explode.
Hey, you said her name right. Good job. I am so proud of you. You're growing up, Mercedes.
That's messed up.
It's true.
But this happened after Claudine Gay basically combusted in front of Congress when Elise Stefanik. Yeah, it was just one of the best things I ever watched. So it was after that that Harvard was pushed into doing this report, which was delayed, honestly. Like they were really slow rolling it. So there were some revelations in this report that I wanted to share with you. Now, as a result of this report, a few things have happened. The administration froze $2.2 billion in federal grants, saying that they have not done enough to protect Jewish students. I think there was also Trump also announced that they're going to get their tax exemption revoked. Now, the argument specifically on the tax exemption is because the law that it's being cited that allows institutions to have tax exemption specifically brings up like that these institutions can't be creating or promoting propaganda, that they have to be fair. That's essentially one of the sections of this law. And that is being cited as an issue with Harvard specifically and why they should be stripped of their tax status. I'm sure Harvard's going to challenge that. So we'll see what happens. Course. Also, Secretary of Education Linda McMahon published a letter pointing out their systemic failures. So overall, it's not going well for Harvard.
No, it's not. And the president of Harvard was in an interview last week. Even the very progressive interviewer was like, so just like FYI, you guys have over $50 billion in endowment. Why do you need money from the government again?
I saw that interview.
He was like, it's very simple. Basically talking to her like she's an idiot. And we need it for medical research, obviously.
That is exactly what he sounded like, Rachel.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
So you have the country's largest endowment. Famously, it's over $52 billion. And one of the questions that we get all the time from readers is, why does Harvard need billions more in federal funding?
It's really very simple. The vast bulk of our federal funding is for support of research through grants and contracts. These are agreements that oblige the university to carry out work that the federal government has approved in order to advance national interests. For example, quantum science, which right now is a huge strategic area for the nation, particularly in our competition with China. They support this research because of the economic benefits, and they support the research because so much of it is dedicated to preventing and treating disease. So we're paid to do the work, and we're happy to do that, but we should never think of this as a gift. It has many strings attached.
I mean, it wasn't like, okay, but $50 billion is what you have. And I know that everybody, when they hear that any kind of medical funding is being cut, like they just freak out. Everybody's going to start dying. Everyone's dead. No medical research is ever going to happen again if a place like Harvard doesn't receive this enormous amount of money from the government every month, but or year. That money can be diverted, right? Like, we could pick other institutions to give our money to.
And if they really want, if they need more, then yeah. I'm sure there's some successful, like somebody can give them money to run a study.
No. I mean, we act like the federal government is the only distributor of cash money. And we also act like Harvard's the only place that can do medical research.
Well, like, and it's I also think there could be another way that you could do this. Like, even if the government does want to give them something specifically, let's say the government wants to run a study to advance some kind of really specific medical advancement, I think there needs to be a reworking of how that money is supervised, audited, because one of the issues is that a lot of time this money goes more towards the administrative costs versus the study of science. So there could be a need for an evaluation on that. But regardless, like, money is fungible. And if the university is doing things, let me lay out just some of the highlights that were in the report. Like, I'm not going to into all of them.
Yes.
But there was a really good thread that covered them. And I'll share it in the show notes if you guys want to go deeper. But like, the report detailed that Jewish students were being told their presence was offensive. Some were asked to denounce Israel to be considered one of the good ones. Like, that is a quote. So to be considered that you're a good Jew.
You should see Sadie right now.
Just like, you have to denounce Israel to be a good Jew.
Okay.
A Jewish student.
That totally makes sense.
The Jewish student was barred from sharing their Holocaust survivor story of their grandfather because it involved the British mandate of Palestine, and it was deemed not tasteful and inherently one-sided. So to tell the story of your Holocaust survivor grandfather is...
You have to center Palestinian students in that?
You have to also mention the... Because otherwise it's inherently one-sided.
Yes, it is inherently one-sided because you're talking about one thing and one person and one experience. People are so dense.
So, and then there was also reports that after October 7th, the digital harassment, the anonymous apps like surged. That to me is not surprising. We see that all the time. Even on X, you see where something scandalous or something really divisive happens and the social media just kind of blows up into a disgusting cesspool.
Yeah.
But, you know, you had also like posts of Israel deserved it, and then just creating, I think the bigger issue were the reports of students feeling like they could not walk around the campus, students being blocked from access to common spaces. There was an event where hostage families and Jewish students were moved away, and they had to be protected, and because the protesters were roaming freely around the campus and not allowing these families to speak. So I think that's the bigger issue. And that's really where the debate of constitutional violations, free speech, freedom of religion, like specifically, it is illegal and is unconstitutional for like these students. There's not an issue. And there's a lot of this debate about what this is, free speech and people should be able to protest Israel. Absolutely. People can protest Israel. That is a right.
Not
that
the
is
issue. That's
free
not
speech.
The issue.
That is not the issue. The issue is that when you have these protesters, first of all, some who are agitators that are from off campus to block Jewish students because they are Jewish from accessing common areas in the university or feeling like they can't attend class.
That's not a free speech issue. And taking it a step further, they're not just like blocking students. They're blocking teachers, they're disrupting normal university activities, they're also destructing and destroying school property. Like, when is that ever allowed? It's not, but they've been given a free pass since October 7th to come on campus, make demands, tell the administration what they're going to do, cancel graduation ceremonies, plop their butts in tents in the common area of the school, demand Uber and Grubhub from people, say that they're going to go on a hunger strike for 3 months, whatever, and then also block Jewish students, harass them, yell anti-Semitic slurs and how they want to kill Jews, which absolutely is happening. Please do not comment that it's not. I have videos, like it is. And then actively destroying repeatedly property of the university. So this isn't about free speech. Get a new argument against what the Trump administration is doing, because it's not about not being able to say, I disagree with what Netanyahu is doing. That's not what anybody's arguing.
And I think we're seeing that just in general in just how a lot of times these conversations are happening. There's a lot of people, and I think we need to be aware of this. There's a lot of conversation that is happening where they're saying, oh, you're encroaching on my free speech because I'm insulting or I'm criticizing Israel. That is not the issue. You can absolutely criticize Israel. Yeah. In fact, before October 7th happened, if October 7th hadn't happened, I don't think Netanyahu would still be the prime minister. There was so much division in Israel at that time, especially against the conservative wing of their government, that if October 7th hadn't happened, where they became like more united because they had been attacked, he would have been out.
Yeah.
So criticizing, that's not an issue. Like, they criticize themselves, obviously, and there's not an issue with criticizing the state or the government. The issue is that there's a lot of people that are using this event to cloak themselves and defend. And then they interchange, like, if you listen to them, they will interchange and like their mask will come off and they'll say the Jews.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big difference. There's a big difference when you're criticizing the government or what someone within or who is an Israeli is doing independently versus when you're starting to go just in general, the Jews are a problem.
Exactly. Exactly. And on the other side of it, there's a whole lot of people who want to be able to cry attack on free speech just because you're disagreeing with them. Their tummies hurt when you're like, no, that's a stupid argument, or I disagree with what you're saying, or tell me the historical basis for that, or hey, you're wrong on the facts, that actually didn't happen. They're like, don't, you're attacking free speech. It's no, I'm shutting down your argument. Get a better argument. So I think there's a big misunderstanding about what free speech rights are and the difference between me or the administration or the university officials telling students, you can't do this. And these are the reasons why. There's a difference between that and taking away someone's ability to say, I don't like how Israel's handled this. And I just want to understand why kids who were accepted to one of the, if not the most elite college campuses in our country, don't understand and can't differentiate. Like, how is this possible that they're so confused? I thought they were the best and the brightest.
Also, it's worth pointing out that this is a private institution. A lot of these are private institutions. If they want to put certain rules in place, they have a right to do that. Also, I think just in general, it's a crime to block people from access that they have a right to cause damage to a property. Now, you can try to make an argument, because even this accusation that by removing the funding or taking the funding away or the tax exempt status away from Harvard University is an attack on their free speech or their First Amendment right. Access to those funds and that tax exemption
is not a right.
See,
again, when someone says you are infringing on my rights, what am I infringing on? And how did that become your right? Where does it say that's your right? Harvard doesn't have a right to the government's money. Like you said, they're a private institution. They don't have a right to government funds. They have had the luxury of that. That doesn't mean it's a right. People are very fundamentally confused about what rights are. Let's start talking about that. Well, it's going to be a 4-hour podcast.
I know. Because what would be an issue is if the government came in and basically said that they could no longer exist. Now, right. I will admit, and one of the things that do cause me concern is like one of the demands that the administration is making, as in that the administration has or should be given some kind of power to oversee the rules, regulations, teachings, academics of Harvard University. I don't agree with that. That is one of the proposals that the administration has made. I am absolutely against that. But that also, I mean, they can be...
They can look at it.
They can...
Like, sure. Yeah. Let's look at it and see if we want to be affiliated with this.
And specifically, if they want to look at it and they and if their argument is that we need to have access to this or we need to have a say in this... And I don't want to say a say, but we need to have access and knowledge of what it is mm-hmm. that you're doing.
Yeah.
In order for us to make a fair determination on whether or not you should get our money, I think mm-hmm. that makes sense. I don't yeah. think that the United States needs to be coming in and telling Harvard University what they can do and how they can teach. If Harvard University wants to be a trash cesspool that's pushing propaganda,
congratulations, you have arrived and you can continue to do so. We just aren't going to give you our taxpayer dollars. Sorry, no.
Correct. So those are my general thoughts on that situation. And we're seeing that continue to happen, just like the protests that just happened with Columbia University. There was recently some stuff with some activists that were caught on Zoom. I think they were from Temple University that were mm-hmm. specifically, they were stating like the goal of their activism was to take down the United States.
Great.
So don't. It's just not as simple as these are just some upset kids.
Well, that's what you're absolutely right. I mentioned that on Instagram last night. If people think that this is just what they're watching is simply the disillusion, like, how do I put this? This is not just about our universities and colleges that are storied and part of our American ethos dissolving. It's not just about that. So if we're lamenting what places like Harvard, Stanford, Yale, Princeton have become, and we're like, that's really sad, and then we leave it at that, we have totally missed it, because this is not just about those. Because lots of people don't care about the elite universities. They're like, whatever.
No, they do matter. They're annoying right now, but they matter.
But if we think that this is only about the takedown of those universities and we leave it at that, then our universities have done a really, really, really bad job. Our education system has done a really, really bad job at giving people alarm bells, because this is not just about taking down universities. This is about taking down the idea, the concept, the beauty, and the actual real fabric of Western civilization. This is not about just these universities and some stupid kids protesting stuff that they don't even understand themselves. It's a movement to destroy our idea of why America matters, to destroy the real experiences over the past 250 years of the beauty of our country, why it matters on a global stage. They want nothing to do with that. And that is what people, I think, are missing when they continue to just focus on it being about the colleges. It's not. It's about a concerted effort that's really been perpetuated by the universities for decades now, that Western civilization, America specifically, is not as great as we think it is. We don't need it. It needs to be dismantled. And these kids, knowingly or unknowingly, are participating in that. And I hope that most of it's unknowingly. I want to think that kids are smarter than that.
I think some of it is like trending. Like, it's because everything, it's what everybody else is doing. And I think at that age, everybody's looking for something.
They want to assert themselves and be a part of something and add something to their identity. But this is particularly destructive, and it's not just about the college campuses.
And they will sometimes try and make a comparison of this, like the students themselves. I'm not talking mm-hmm. about like normie people, but they'll try and make an attempt to compare this as if it were a civil rights issue, and it's not.
Not.
First of all, what you are promoting has nothing to, I mean, it would be different if what you are protesting was the United States affiliation or funding of the war. We can absolutely talk about that. Both Rachel and I like have opinions about giving our taxpayer monies to foreign countries. Mm-hmm. That is a debate to be had. But that's not the primary focus of mm-hmm. these protests. This isn't some I don't know, righteous movement of
Well, it's not
equal
even about
rights.
Civil rights. It's not about equal rights at all. It's about eliminating a people group.
Correct.
Like, this is the opposite of civil rights.
Correct.
So, no. No, so, these kids have no clue what they're... I mean, I think some of them have a clue about what they're suggesting, and they're totally fine. They've imbibed a decade or 20 years, however old they are. If they live in this country, they've imbibed a narrative that America's the worst. You know,
oh, and so believe that. And yeah, the institutions themselves have taught them that, which is part of the problem.
Yes. So it's not just a Harvard problem. It's an American problem is what we're dealing with now.
So we will be keeping an eye on that for sure, especially considering that we have a brand new administration. And I think this recent, most recent dust up or whatever that's happening with Columbia University is, I think this is really the first big protest or disruption that is since this new administration has come in. It's a very different administration. I think these kids kind of forgot that things have changed. They did not expect to be held, identified, and now officially processed. And so it remains to be seen who was actually a student, who wasn't a student, who's on a visa, who maybe was there illegally.
I'm looking out for that.
And it'll be interesting to see how the Democrats handle it, too, about this whole, like, due process and rights and free speech. And especially, like, yes, if you're here on a student visa, you can participate in protests, but you cannot disrupt. You can't cause damage. You can't trespass. You cannot promote ideas that are about... I don't know, the destruction of the United States and Western civilization.
Yeah.
So I'll be interested to see how Mario does with that. And I did that on purpose.
Yeah. She's even wearing her Mario shirt right now.
I do. I have my Mario t-shirt on right now.
That's
in our merch store. I got it like extra large so I can just lounge in it.
Move. Awesome. Move freely.
It's a very thick, comfortable t-shirt. So nice. Recommend. It's in the merch store. Link in the show notes.
And you'll get tons of questions when you go out in public. They'll be like, why?
No, my husband's like, you're not wearing that out in public. So I want to go ahead and wrap us up for today's episode. Let me first remind you that there is a link in the show notes for a listener survey. We really want to hear from you. This survey, we're going to read everybody's response. We're going to break it down, and it's going to help us determine how we can improve and how we can also provide the content that you guys want to hear. Mm-hmm. It should take you less than 10 minutes.
And it really helps us.
And you will be entered to win some free merch and a free subscription to our Substack, which has exclusive content like our Unfiltered episode that will be coming out this weekend. Also, I want to read a review. Can I read a review?
Yay, absolutely.
Okay.
If it's nice. Or is it mean? I kind of like the mean ones too, though.
I do. We only had that one a few times back. That we haven't had another one.
That one was good.
He was being mad.
He didn't like us.
Billy Bob, whatever his name was. So this one is a 5-star rating from Hopes4, and it says, I have been listening from the beginning. I was so happy when the ladies decided to make the podcast permanent and not end after the 2024 election season. I feel like I'm sitting with my friends discussing political issues when listening to them. I can't get this kind of conversation or thought process in my daily life of friends and family. And because of that, I am forever grateful to these ladies for filling the void in my life. That is so sweet.
Aw, I love this.
And she is a paying subscriber, and I feel that the money is well spent in support of their mission, which provides me and others with valuable, honest content. Keep up the great work.
Aw, what's her name? I like her.
I don't know if her name is Hope, because it says Hopes4. Handle.
Hope, whatever your name is, we like you. Come into the paid subscriber chat on Substack and tell us your real name.
Yes, so we can be like, hello. Be
thank you,
excited.
Hope.
That was very sweet. We were
if
happy
that's
to...
your name. Thank you, Hope.
Your question hope mark. To us.
Yes.
All right, that's it for today's episode. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button, leave us a 5-star rating, comment, and share it with a friend, because just like the media, the algorithms are trash. And they
are. They're horrible.
They don't particularly like us. Mm-mm. Remember, consider becoming a paying supporter and you'll get the bonus content like our Unfiltered episode that's going to be coming out this weekend, including every Unfiltered episode that we have done thus far, which are very popular and they're a lot of fun.
Sometimes we start them and we don't even know exactly what we're talking about, but it's a good time. And if you want my sweet Mario t-shirt or hold on to your pantalones or
the chicken in the hard place.
That's right. I just made a new sticker because the last episode we were talking with Amanda Peterson, I said chicken in a hard place instead of rock in a hard place.
Oh my gosh.
So we also have a new chicken and a hard place sticker in the store. So go ahead and grab that. That's it for today's episode. We will see you again on Tuesday. Who knows what's going to happen? If you're a paying supporter, we'll see you this weekend on an unfiltered episode. In the meantime, here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance, like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.